Thanks for tuning into the Pittsburgh Dish. If you like what we're doing, consider supporting the show. You can go to our website at www.pittsburghdish.com and click on our support button, which will take you to our Buzzsprout page. If you have a food-centric business and want to advertise on the show, reach out to us. You can reach us through Get In Touch on our website or even direct message on our Instagram. Thank you. Now on to the show. Welcome to the Pittsburgh Dish. I'm your host, Doug Heilman. How does a little red wagon carry you into private chefing? Chef Janet shares her story this week. Looking for food to feed your soul? Our friend Shayla Penn has just the place. And want to avoid mushy noodles in your next halushki? We'll give you a pro tip in our recipe of the week. All that ahead? Stay tuned. Thanks to Beano's brand, Sauces and Dressings, for being a sponsor of the Pittsburgh Dish. Dress up your next sandwich with one of their unique flavors, like peach habanero sauce or their all-American sandwich spread. And follow them for more ideas at Beano's brand on Facebook and Instagram. Now back to the show. Well, hey, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Would you introduce yourself and what you have going on right now in food?
Sure. So my name is Janet Loughran. I know that a lot of people don't know how to pronounce it, but it's Loughran. My husband is very Scottish. Anyway, so right now I'm a private chef to 8 or 9 clients each week. I will deliver meals for them and their family. I sometimes wish I had a private chef, you know, with 2 kids.
Same here.
I know, but it's nice. So I'll make extra and have those meals for us as well. And then I do cooking classes. I'm on Talk Pittsburgh once a month, and I want to do more cooking classes because I think they're so much fun. But yeah, it's exciting on Talk Pittsburgh. I just got an email from Alonce. He's the producer.
Yeah, the producer of the show. Yeah.
On KDKA. And they've outlined the dates for the entire year that they want me on every month. And I'm like, okay.
So you've got a gig for the whole year.
Yeah, I think I'm doing something right.
You definitely are doing something right.
It's working out.
It's been a crazy year of growth for you.
It's funny because I was looking back through pictures on my phone and realizing, oh, I did that and I met them and it's just, I'm a shy girl kind of. So I think when I talk about my passion, I just come out, my silly side comes out. But yeah, it's been a whirlwind year and I'm excited to see what this year's, what's going to come. So
I love it for you. And I had a question about your meal service as a private chef. You call it Red Wagon Meals?
Yeah, there's a funny story behind that. So red has always been my favorite color. And my sister lives in an apartment complex that has a beautiful pool. And I used to go and schlep all my kids' stuff in the red wagon. So people started saying, oh, there's the girl with the red wagon. Uh-huh. Well, when COVID hit, everything kind of shut down and I didn't have anything to do. I was home all day. And we had a get together. Actually, it's kind of funny. We all went up to the top of the parking garage and had like camping chairs 6 feet apart in a circle and had a get together, but like socially distanced. And I brought my soup there and they were saying, can I buy this from you? And I said, well, yeah, sure. Why not? And then it just blew up. Everybody started telling other people that you can have these gourmet meals delivered to your door. And I just would use my red wagon and go through the hallways of the apartment complex. And that's how I delivered. So that's why it's Red Wagon Meals.
Oh my gosh. I love that origin story. Yeah. I want to go back. What was the soup that started it all?
Oh, good question. My wedding soup.
That's kind of like a Pittsburgh favorite anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I'm one of those people that when I find something that I really like, I want to make it the best that I possibly can so I can enjoy it at home. I make my own mini meatballs, which is tedious, but I've never found a meatball that's, you know, fresh or frozen that I like in place. So make their own stock, like use escarole and put the like egg yolk and the Parmesan in there at the end. And that makes it silky smooth. I'm giving all my secrets away.
I don't know if anyone will do this. This is like why you went from zero to hero as a private chef. By lugging your soup in your red wagon.
Well, yeah, it's funny. I don't realize how much I know until people start asking me questions about cooking. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, it's like it's nothing. Like everybody knows this, right? And they don't. Even the most minute detail, people on Instagram, I have Chef Life Hacks is on Instagram. Yes. Oh, I love doing that because, and we'll probably talk about this, but like I feel like the culmination of my life has prepared me for this moment because I've trained numerous people, like thousands of people probably throughout my career. And now I'm just training you in your home to feel more comfortable in the kitchen. And that's my biggest goal. I just love that. So that's why I'm here. Oh,
I love that too. I think I love, I love teaching people how to cook more than I probably love just cooking all the time for people. I'd rather you know. I want to teach you what I know. And I mean, I'll cook for you, of course.
Well, that lends to your personality and why I like you. So you're just the sweetest. Do you remember when we met?
Do I remember when we met? Is it the cohort meetup?
Yeah, yeah, the cohort meetup. Yeah.
So it hasn't even been a full year.
I think that was April or May of last year. Mm-hmm. I remember I saw you on Instagram, and I was a baby influencer at that point. Like I had, you know, like maybe 500 followers, 1,000 followers, a baby influencer.
Oh my goodness. I'm still a baby. I'm not even a teenager. I'm a toddler, tween. I don't even know if I'm an influencer.
I don't even think I'm the only thing I influence you is to get into the kitchen more and feel more comfortable, you know?
Well, I think what sets you apart with Chef Life Hacks is, and it's on your tagline, you are a factoid finder.
Yes.
You will show us truly a hack, a time saver, an aha moment, I like to call it. Where do you come by all of these things?
I don't know. I think so. Going back, my dad and his brothers and my aunt Kedris, they were all educators. Mm. They big learners. Mm-hmm. They always, you know, try to learn something new every day. There's an old joke. If you ask my dad what the time is, he'll tell you how to make a wooden watch. So he's long-winded. He also should have been on Jeopardy years ago. But anywho, it kind of instilled in me like, oh, that's really cool. I bet other people would like to know that, you know, it makes it easier for you, or like you said, time saving. Mm-hmm. So I think that is where that factoid thing comes from. But back to the cohort, can I tell you? I remember this.
Oh, yes.
All right. So I had like reverence for you. I just loved your demeanor, your energy. I'm all about energy. Like what you bring to the table is just kind of, it's there, you know?
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And so I saw you and it was like, the crowds parted and you saw me and we pointed at each other and we're like, Doug, Janet. And then, you know, we just met and it was just, you know, we were in cahoots from then on. And
I just
think I think that's the best part about all of this. I've met such a great community of foodie people in this area. Some I knew about, some I haven't learned about until now, but it's just friendly. I mean, that's what Pittsburgh is. You know, I didn't realize, cause I moved around a lot as a kid. I didn't realize, you know, it's kind of awkward to talk to the cashier at the 7-Eleven when you're in Virginia Beach. They're like, who's this crazy person? And then if you don't talk to the cashier here in Pittsburgh, it's like, who's this crazy person not talking to me, you know? So we have it good here, I feel like. Yeah.
And for any of our listeners that don't know what the cohort is, it's an organization that's trying to really build a community of creators and give more resources for people that are out there trying to do their thing. And so that was one of the first mixers, let's say, or networking things they had. And I met a couple folks that night, especially you, who I had also noticed when KDKA began the second show called Talk Pittsburgh with Heather Abraham, and you were going to be on it. And I'm excited for anyone that's getting into that kitchen because I feel so privileged to be there too.
Right.
And so congrats on your journey there.
Yeah. You've been a good resource too. Cause I know the first couple times I was on, you know, it's a new space for me. I don't know how to navigate it. And I'm one of those people that just wants to do a really good job, you know?
Same.
So you were so instrumental in saying, okay, yeah, you know, spell this out in your head, but also have a little bit of leeway because maybe they'll shoot you a question you weren't anticipating or you're going a direction. And just the number one, and actually I've told other people that are on Talk Pittsburgh. I have a friend, Caitlin, Art with Mrs. E. She's now going to be a regular as well. And I said, you know, my friend Doug told me, talk to Heather like you're talking to a friend and just explaining what you're doing. You know, say hello to the cameras at the beginning of the end, but just block that out. And that has been so helpful for me.
Yeah, you kind of, if anyone's going out on live TV, if you focus more on the person you're talking to, it's easier. I'll just say that. I think it's easier. And then you get to play off of their energy.
Right. You don't have an agenda in your mind like, oh, I got to get to this, or which you do somewhat, but you have to be fluid with it. Yeah.
Yeah. My only point is I want to make sure they get a bite. And I've noticed other folks that are keen on that. They'll have it ready and they'll be making another one, which is all, you know, theatrics, but it's super fun.
No, I think so too. I mean, I never would have guessed that I would be on TV. I was real shy as a kid. I have a twin sister. She was the outgoing one. You know, I was just kind of in the corner like, hi, I'm over here, you know. But I just think, like I said, it's my passion and it's what I love to talk about. So it just flows out of me. And at the end of every segment, I'm like, whoa, what just happened? You know, it's just a whirlwind. My knees shake every time.
Do you remember still, what you say on TV?
Somewhat. I remember what the missteps. Isn't that so funny? You go straight to like, oh, I shouldn't have said that. Or I should have, you know, transitioned easy. And then I look back, I'm like, it was fine. No one would know, you know? It's so crazy how I got on there too. So it's coming up on my anniversary. And one of the dates that they're having me on is the exact year anniversary, April 10th, that I was on my first appearance.
That's awesome.
I just think that's really serendipitous. I think it's a good thing. But anyway, Donnie Iris, he's a local guy and he had a couple hits in the 70s, 80s. And he used to always come into the golf course that I worked at. Just very unassuming, the nicest guy. You have no idea who he is until you know who he is, you know? And he was on Pittsburgh Today Live. I think it was his 80th birthday, 85th birthday, something like that. They were just commemorating him. And so I commented on, you know, the post, same thing, nicest guy, used to come in the golf course. I would say maybe 20 minutes later, Heather Abraham liked that comment. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Because I've been watching her. We're the same age, almost literally the same age. And I remember watching her, you know, when she just started out, I'm like, look at this girl go. Like she has she's so down to earth, but she keeps it professional, but it's fun to watch her. Right. And wow, she liked my comment. 10 minutes later, she starts following me. I'm like, whoa, what the heck? And then 5 minutes after that, she sends me a message through like a DM and says, we're starting something new in Pittsburgh. I'd like to, you know, on K2KA, would like to talk to you about it. Sure.
Goodness.
And then the rest is history. And that's how she got in contact with me. And now she says, I'm like one of them, like part of the crew, like you feel like too. It's so crazy cool, you know?
I'm so excited for you. Congratulations.
Thanks, man. You're so sweet. Aww. You're such a good friend.
You know, you have mentioned a couple times now your family, your dad, and the sort of the learned approach, and you have a twin sister.
I do.
And I was just wondering, what was food life like kind of going back in your early days, growing up, like who cooked for you? You know, how did that shape you becoming a chef?
Good question. I told my mom I would probably say this, but my mom is a great baker. Wink, wink, wink.
Okay.
She, you know, we ate a lot of Chef Boyardee and you know, Hamburger Helper, which was delicious to me.
Well, I think let's take a step back. It's convenient for any mom out there. And you are a mom of two.
Sure.
We just talked about Heather Abraham's a mom of three. And you're working. You're doing some crazy stuff. So I think, you know, any mom out there that's gone with the convenience foods, have at it.
I agree. I know. And to add on top of that, my dad was in the Navy. So a lot of times he was gone for months at a time. You know, she had two young kids, full-time job. A lot of times we weren't around other family that could help her out. So she's an angel. We were born in California and my parents didn't know they were having twins until an hour before we were born.
Whoa.
So yeah, they didn't do sonograms unless you were having complications. And it was right before, you know, she was in labor and her knees were shaking going into the operating room and everything. They had to go out and get another stroller, another car seat, all that stuff. So I remember whenever I had my first kid, I don't know if I was in the hospital or at home. I remember having the realization and looking at my mom with like eyes as big as sand dollars, like, how did you do this with two without help? Because my dad, unfortunately, had to go out, what they call out to sea. So he was on a lot of naval ships and things like that. And they thought it was going to be a 2-month cruise, turned into a 10-month cruise. Whoa. So he was gone the entire first year of our lives. And
did you live close to family at all?
No. I think at that point we were in Napa because I was born in Huntington Beach and then we moved to Napa. And then I had family in Idaho. My dad's family's from Idaho, Seattle area. And then my mom's family's from Pittsburgh.
Okay.
So she was kind of on an island out there. You know, there'd be people that come out and help her here and there, but I give her so much credit.
Yeah,
my mom's the best.
Not the same kind of family network that you have if you're living close to her.
Right. Yeah. I remember whenever we had our kids, my husband and I, he wanted to move away. I'm like, you don't understand what it's like to not have that familial support around you because it gives you peace of mind as a family that the people that are helping to raise your kids are part of your family. Yeah. You know, it's a different thing. But after my dad got out of the Navy, you know, it was right after the Gulf War. He was trying to find a job and there was a little bit of an in-between time. So we lived with my grandma, Cecilia, who I talk about a lot.
Yeah.
And she was the first person that she would, it wasn't even like she pushed me into the kitchen. It was, she just would do what she normally did. I'm like, what are you doing, Grandma? She's like, oh, I'm making halupkis or cabbage rolls or I'm making spetzel or I'm making my chicken noodle soup. And I'm like, well, what can I do? Well, you can snap those beans over there. You could tear up that bread for the stuffing, or, you know? So it just kind of got me more comfortable. Mm-hmm. And then whenever we moved to Cranberry, I think I was 13 when we moved. So Food Network started and I started watching people cook. I'm like, well, I can do that, you know? Mm-hmm. Let's try. Whew, it's harder than you think. The first thing I ever made was a bolognese. Oh, it took about 7 hours to make. It was horrible. Oh. It had stuck to the bottom. Like looking back, and my parents, God bless their souls, they were like, this is really good, you know, and but it was horrible.
You tried.
Right.
You have to try and fail because the failures are the biggest lessons.
Sure. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. In my life, for sure, my failures have definitely been my biggest lessons. So that, you know, I'm not a baker. I think it's... I love people that are bakers.
Yes.
It's a little restrictive for me. I kind of like to just throw stuff into a pot and make it taste good. But mm-hmm. with baking, it's so regimented. You have to put exactly this amount. You have to have the good environment in the oven to make it come out right. And you don't know if it's right till the end. So it's a different animal, even though it's the same creature. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm definitely a savory chef for sure.
Where did your grandma live?
Belle Vernon. She's
local to Pittsburgh. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so about an hour south of Pittsburgh. Yeah.
So when you all moved back and you said you lived with her a little bit, you were down in Belle Vernon, then mm-hmm. up in Cranberry. Your grandma was really the one that sort of attracted you into the kitchen.
She did. And then I have another family member, my Uncle Mac. He's from Alabama and he's lived here for almost 40 years. And I think his accent has gotten stronger in those 40 years. He's funny. He's very Southern. Whenever I was younger, I was a little bit scared of him because he has a loud voice and, you know, he'd be cooking Thanksgiving dinner and he'd be like, there's too many people in here. Get out of the kitchen, you know? And I'm like, okay, you know, but he's softened up, especially as he's become a grandfather. I'm like, okay. Who's this squishy little bear, you know? But he introduced me to different flavors and ingredients that I had never seen before, you know, okra or Cajun spices that were spicy, like... I feel like the rest of my family is allergic to spice. You know what I mean? But yes. He brought that in and, you know, red eye gravy and sausage gravy and just, oh my gosh, I could go on. His pulled pork. Oh, so good. I'm still trying to get the recipe for that, but I have to barter and trade, I feel. So, yeah, he is a big inspiration for me too.
And this was Uncle Mike.
Uncle Mike Polk. Yeah.
Uncle Mike. Aw. Yeah. And so, you know, all of that's happening in the family. When did you decide that you would go to culinary school, or how did that educational path happen?
Great question. I did a little backwards, actually. So I told you I was shy. I remember, I think I was 17 and I started working at this place called Fun for All. It was like a go-kart arcade putt-putt place, you know? And if you've seen that movie, Adventureland, that was filmed at Kennywood, it's similar to that, like smaller scale, but similar. Where, like, you know, we were just kids just having the blast and our bosses were just absent. You know what I mean? They're like, what? I don't care what you're doing. That kind of brought me out of my shell.
Yeah.
I went to Pitt and graduated with a marketing degree and I had no idea what I was going to do. I was still having a good time. You know what I mean? Sowed those wild oats. And I was working for a gentleman who used to be a physician and then like higher up in Highmark. I was just kind of like an assistant. I was doing clerical work, you know, setting appointments and flights and everything like that. And he was really nice, really sweet. He had a wonderful, lovely wife named Judy who liked to have dinner parties and get-togethers and things. And she was kind of behind the eight ball one day. I could see that she was stressed trying to get everything ready for the weekend party. I'm like, Jude, I like to cook. I can help if you need. And one thing led to another, and I kind of just took over. And she enjoyed that I took over and just kind of took the helm.
Yeah.
And so Monday morning rolls around, and my boss comes over and says, hey, I don't want to lose you as an employee, but what the hell are you doing? I see you in the kitchen. That is what you should be doing. You come alive. Like, I didn't realize. And it's so hard for me because every time I tell this story, I tear up because it really... It was the trajectory of what I should have been doing and what makes me so happy to do. Shoot. That's another thing I get from my mom. We cry when we're sad and we cry when we're happy. So anyway, he said that, and it just was like a light bulb went on in my head. I'm like, why am I not doing this? If I can do something that I love and get paid for it, why not? Mm-hmm. So then I just was, I think it was 2 months later, I enrolled in culinary school, and I just wanted to learn as much as I possibly could. And I did. It was the best decision I ever made. So that's where I got there.
Oh my gosh.
Do you have a tissue?
I have a tissue. Hold, let's take a little break.
Okay. This is Janet Loughran of Chef Life Hacks, and you're listening to The Pittsburgh Dish.
Oh, now after tissues.
Yeah, we got tissues. Okay. We're good.
Okay. But so you know, you have this epiphany. You head to culinary school. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, give me the cliff notes. Like, what happens after culinary school? Where did you start your, you know, professional, what would we call it? The commercial kitchen career, so to speak.
Okay. So where I worked straight off the bat was actually probably one of the best places I could work. It was a big banquet hall as well as a restaurant that was attached to it.
Okay.
So I started as a server. They didn't have any availability in the kitchen, surprisingly. Mm. I just kind of worked my way through and became the assistant manager of the restaurant. And then finally was like, can I do catering? You know, maybe off-premises catering. Yeah. They used to call me Slash. So, you know, I was assistant manager / off-premises. Premises manager / cook / you know, so it was just me being a sponge. I just wanted to learn everything I could about every aspect of that business. I was there for about 3 years, and then where I moved, actually, I think I was only there for a year and a half. It was called Tusca Tapas in the Southside Works. It's no longer there, unfortunately. And I learned the most there about cooking that I've ever learned. And Jeff Maggs, he was a big mentor for me to understand that, okay, if you don't know how to do something, tell someone. Mm-hmm. Don't waste that product thinking, oh, I can do this. I remember I cut carrots, and he's like, do you know how to diamond cut them? I'm like, oh yeah, sure. No clue. You know, I'm like looking on Google on my phone. I'm like, okay, I think I got this. And he comes back over. He's like, Janet, just ask me next time. It's okay. You know, you have to have that humility that when you're learning, you don't know everything. And so, and he was actually the sous chef. He wasn't the exec chef, but I learned a lot from him. And then after that was the longest tenure of my career was food and beverage director at a 36-hole public golf course.
Wow.
So I ran the restaurant and the bar, and then we did about 120 outings every year, and I would cater the food for that. So that really let me understand not only about, you know, having so many things in the air, so many balls in the air, and how to manage all these different departments at the same time, while getting there, you know, 6 a.m. at work, and just employee relations, my reaction to things, understanding that, you know, there's a way to handle different types of personalities, because not everybody's the same. You're not going to get the same motivation from everybody or the way to handle them. Some people need tough love. Some people need a little, you know, arm over the shoulder and like, hey, you're doing a great job. I know you made a mistake, but let's pick it up and we could do this again and do it better the next time. So I learned a lot there, actually.
I mean, it's a full team experience that I am really not so familiar with when you're talking about a restaurant kitchen, you know, so different than being a home cook. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I saw that with you when we did Outreached Arms.
Oh,
you know what you're doing, how to do it, but I couldn't read the look on your face. I'm like, oh, what should I do? Are you mad at me? Like, you're like, oh no, I'm just concentrating.
Yeah, I have a resting bee face. I have a very, so when I'm in the zone and I'm just working and I don't have anybody, you know, talking to me, I look angry and
focused.
I don't understand why my face does that, but I've actually, it would be part of like my training spiel when I would tell people, I'm like, listen, if you see me and my face looks kind of mad, I'm usually in a good mood. Like, you'll know when I'm not, you know? So just disregard that. But yeah, I just think it was all encompassing, you know, every single aspect of what running a restaurant and a catering business entails. Mm-hmm. And I was 26 when I started. I don't think they realized how young I was. Mm. You know, so coming in, I mean, I love the Bear, the show, but the sous chef, Sydney, she reminds me of myself a lot because I had to manage people that had been there for years before me that were seasoned, that were older. And who's this little young whippersnapper
so
coming
tough
in?
As
it
a
was.
Young new manager who has some chops, knows the things, but you're still learning too. And these folks are really good in their existing roles.
Exactly.
It's an interesting paradigm.
Yeah, it was tough. I will say I'm glad that I had my husband at that time. You know, he's in sales, he works in corporate America. He kind of would say, this isn't as big of a deal as you think, or this is a bigger deal than you think. Mm-hmm. You know, he's an outside the box thinker.
And a sounding board for you.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You know, and I would come home and I'm like, this is what happened. And he would say, well, I think you did a good job. Or, you know, maybe next time you would handle it different this way. Or what did they do that led you to do that? So it just kind of helped me navigate it easier. And I really thank him for that. I've told him that in the past. But yeah,
it's interesting. You've learned so much there, but now you're kind of doing your own thing.
Yeah, which I love.
Do you have any employees that?
No, not yet.
So you were a one-person show.
I am, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Kind of coming back to Red Wagon Meals, I know you talked about the wedding soup that started it all. Do you have a couple recipes that are the most popular thing people are asking for?
Yeah.
I'm not going to ask you what your specialty is because I know you don't love that question.
Isn't that funny?
No chef really does.
Can I tell you why I don't like that question?
Yes.
I haven't explained it. Okay. This is why I feel like it pigeonholes the chef.
Sure.
If you ask what your specialty is, unless you know they own a dumpling place or a shawarma place, like that's their specialty. Mm-hmm. If I'm just a chef and I say, well, my specialty is making good stuff and making more good stuff, you know, that kind of sounds snarky. You can't really say that, kind of discredits their question, which is valid. It's a valid question. But I feel like if you say, what's your favorite thing to make for people? Or what's your favorite thing that you know, people like that you make? Mm-hmm. It kind of... You have an answer for that.
It's, yes.
You know what I mean?
I think that's why I wanted to ask, what is the maybe most requested meal or recipe?
Yeah.
And not that it's your specialty per se, because you might have a favorite that is not that, right?
Right, yeah. My crab cakes. Everyone loves my crab cakes.
Most requested.
Yeah. And I decided at the beginning of the year, I never do New Year's resolutions, but I kind of felt like I had this feeling, I just need to let a lot of things go. Literally, figuratively, in my life, what's happened, you know, professionally, personally. So I started giving away my favorite recipes, like my actual recipes, because I'm a little weird. People would ask for my crab cake recipe. I would give them a recipe for crab cakes. I wouldn't give them my recipe. But yeah, it's the secret ingredient is lemon zest. That's what it is. Yeah. But I think my short ribs, I love making my short ribs and people go crazy over that.
Is that a favorite of your own?
It's hard because I don't know if you feel the same way. When you're working on a meal for a while and you finally sit down to eat it, it's not appetizing to you. You know it's good. You've been testing it and tasting it all throughout. But it's like, I don't know. I sometimes feel like other people's foods are my favorite.
Right.
Because I'm my own worst critic, you know?
Well, also when someone cooks for you, it always tastes better.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
I know.
I love when people cook for me.
So Janet, let's move forward. You have had an incredible year of growth. From a baby influencer to a pretty substantial following on Chef Life Hacks on Instagram. You are a constant regular on local TV. You're still doing your private chefing. What else are you looking forward to in 2024 or future goals?
So it's funny. I need to become one of those people that make goals. I'm kind of like fly by the seat of your pants, see what happens type of thing, and then deal with it when it comes. Which is good and bad at the same time. I love teaching people how to cook. And I think this last year has solidified in my brain that that's what I was meant to do and what really brings me the most joy. I can't tell you whenever someone sends me a message, hey, I never thought I could make short ribs, but you showed me that it's actually easier than I thought. And I made it and it was delicious and my family loved it. And it's just, that's awesome. You know, it's just broadening their education in a way that they didn't think that they were going to get. But food demos, I would love to do in-person and virtual cooking classes. Mm. So even if you're across the country, I can send you a grocery list and then you could cook with me or just sit there and watch and interact with other people that are on there. I'm going to be at the Yinzerfest at the David Lawrence Convention Center and do like a big demo in front of a big crowd. So
that's awesome.
I know. It's funny. Like whenever I'm in front of a phone or a camera screen or anything like that, I'm cool. Like I'm good with it. And then you get a bunch of eyeballs looking at me and I get a little nervous. Like my shy little, you know, introvert side comes out and I think we're going to have to do, maybe you can come. I'm going to do a couple like softs.
You'll do great.
Thanks,
I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks, buddy.
Janet, this has been such a great conversation. I always like to give everyone a moment to, you know, go ahead and plug again everything you've got going on. But then I have a final question for you.
Okay. Yeah, I have the Red Wagon Meals. I do deliveries and I do catering as well through that. I am setting up a website for myself, which is very exciting.
Yes.
So I'll give you news on that on Chef Life Hacks on Instagram whenever that comes out. But just a lot of little things coming up that I'm super excited about. I'm really trying to pick and choose what really excites me and what I'm going to do a great job at helping to, you know, get out to the masses. So yeah, that's where I'm at.
Oh my gosh, I love it. And if folks are trying to find you on Instagram, it's chef.life.hacks.
Right. And I've also actually searched, if you don't do the dots, it'll still come up.
Oh, good.
So yeah. Yay. But I kind of like that delineation. So, you know, like it's not chef life, it's chef and life hacks.
Yes.
You know, it's not just in the kitchen. So
I love it.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. So final question I always have for everyone on the show. The show is called The Pittsburgh Dish. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to ask you, what has been the best dish you've eaten this week?
This week? Oh my gosh. I wish I'm blanking right now. Well, you know what? I'll plug myself. I just made my short ribs last week and I tried it. I mean, like, you know what? That's damn good. It's just, I would be raving about it if I got it in a restaurant. So it sounds a little selfish, but I guess my short ribs.
Oh, I think it's okay. You are not the first person that has made their own food and said it was the best this week.
Oh, good. So. Okay.
Janet Loughran, thanks so much for being on the show.
My pleasure.
Up next, the weekly recommend. We want to thank Isley's for sponsoring this week's episode of The Pittsburgh Dish. Their White House cherry ice cream flavor recently came out on top as a fan favorite. Pick up some for yourself on your next grocery trip. Go to Isley's.com and check their store locator to see where Isley's products are sold near you. Hey, everybody. We're back with my friend Shayla Penn of Berg's Eats and Treats on Facebook. Hey, Shayla, I was wondering if you could give us a restaurant recommendation. I know you have been making the rounds for some of those top fives. Is there a place that has sort of stood out to you that you've stopped at that could use a little love and you just thought the food was great?
Yeah, so I want to recommend definitely Annie Eats. The chef and owner is named Asia. She's located in McKees Rocks.
Yeah, yeah.
On Island Avenue. She's like a block down from Doughboys.
And what's the cuisine style for Asia?
So it's authentic soul food. She Her motto is food that feeds the soul.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So I got a chance to meet with her and interview her. And her inspiration was her grandmother. Some of her mom, but mostly her grandmother, she said. And she just grew up loving to cook. She bonded with her grandmother cooking and she shared her recipes. And then she just started cooking for events and, you know, pop-ups and everybody. She would sell out. So she, you know, went through the steps and just opened, I think, in December.
So it's new.
It's
that brick and mortar is
new
for her.
Yes. And she has a lot of ties to the community. I do my research on everybody. I don't just
course.
Go and just pop up.
You're not fooling around.
No, I'm not fooling around. So I did my research and I heard nothing but positive things about her. And I reached out to her and told her what I was doing. And she was so excited. She had a whole tasting table when I got there and had an array of her. Oh, it was a beautiful, beautiful spread.
You got to tell me what did you have?
Everything. Fried fish, honey glazed salmon, yams, greens, fried chicken, which was so, so good. She had lamb, dessert. I didn't even want to touch it. Linguine. And that was just not even half of her menu.
Oh, my goodness.
So she makes a lot of other foods, but those were, and the standout to me by far was the honey glazed salmon. And you can pair it over a Pittsburgh classic salad with the fresh cut fries.
I would love that. All right. So that is A&E Eats.
Yes.
Over in McKees
Rocks. On Allen Avenue. Yes.
All right. Shayla.
So, yes.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Shayla Penn is the creator of the popular Facebook group Berg Eats and Treats. You might also catch Shayla on the radio doing some of her top food reviews. I recently sat down with my food friend Beth Kurtz-Taylor for a longer conversation, but we got to talking about one of our favorites, halushki, or as my family calls it, haluski. Let's hear about her version as our recipe of the week. We were talking about an article that you wrote about halushki.
Yes.
Or haluski. I'm not sure. We say halushki.
I say halushki. Yeah.
And it's such a staple in our region. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit more about your version of halushki? Like, how do you make it? And maybe what time of year do you make it?
I usually make it in the fall months because it's a very hearty dish.
It is.
There's a lot of interpretations of it. Depending on where you came from.
Yes.
Not just Poland. A lot of Eastern European countries, you know, you might see a dumpling instead of a noodle.
That's right.
You may see bacon and farmer's cheese put in it. All, you know, and people
are very, it's polarizing.
It is polarizing. Yeah. Yes. Like so many other cuisines.
Yes. Yes.
We do put bacon in ours.
I do like it with bacon.
Of course, we do lots of butter. How does yours come together?
With a lot of butter.
Okay.
I started making it in large quantities, an entire electric roaster full for the marching band's concession stand at high school football games for my son. So I could tell you that big quantity, but we'll scale it down a lot. But it was a 2-day process. But cabbage and onion cut really thin. You know, I would, for a family size, I use a bag of noodles.
Do you buy the Kaluski noodles?
I do not. This is what I buy.
What kind do you like?
I like Manischewitz egg noodles.
Okay.
Extra wide. You know, it's a Jewish food manufacturer, but it is a really sturdy egg noodle that holds up well if this is sitting in your oven for a while or sitting on a buffet table or sitting at a football game in an electric roaster. You know,
Pro tip. Yes.
If you use something else, they tend to get, soggy and mushed out. So, and I always just cook those al dente.
Because they're going to be there for so long.
Yeah. So a ton of butter, sauteing the finely sliced cabbage. So at home, I'll use a bag of noodles, maybe about a half of a good size head of cabbage and 3-4 onions.
Okay.
Slicing them finely thin. I usually put them through the food processor.
Oh. Do you usually put the onions through the food processor?
Okay. And the cabbage. Cut it into wedges and just put it right through the slicing blade.
Okay. All right.
Not the chopping, but the slicing.
All right. Got it.
So melt a big stick of butter in probably a giant 12-inch skillet. And throw that in and just start stirring it around.
How long do you think you cook?
I would say the cabbage is about 20 minutes to a half hour. At least 20.
Yeah, because you got to get a little bit of the golden on the edges.
A little bit, and you want it low and slow, and it gets sweet and delicious. You know, and if you feel like it needs a little more butter, add that in too. But I salt and pepper throughout and taste. You know, initially just put it in with the lid on for a while to steam it and kind of break it down, and then take the lid off after a while. Just keep salting and peppering and tasting until it is just really soft and sweet and delicious.
Gorgeous, luxurious texture that we all love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then when I put it together, sometimes I used to do that step the day before when I was making it for the band, but
A big amount.
I'll cook the noodles, melt some more butter, toss that in, and then incorporate the cooked cabbage in. Now, some people, my mother used to do this, and I'll do this sometimes, put a little caraway in it.
I love caraway.
That's delicious too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, tasting the whole time and making sure your seasoning's adjusted. And yeah, that's it. I've made it for a number of graduation parties and, of course, the band and at home, and we really enjoy it.
Mm,
I'll use that same cabbage cooked down to do a pierogi filling. And another fun thing I found working on this, there was a church in New Kensington that did a Polish platter dinner every fall. And it was kielbasa, halushki, pierogi, and stuffed cabbage, I think you got in this whole thing. But they would, when you roll pierogi, sometimes you roll that dough too much, it gets tough. And instead of continually rolling it, they take the scraps and make halushki out of that dough scrap. We do that. Yeah.
Oh,
we've done
that
too.
So good.
But yeah.
Your version of halushki. I could probably talk about it for another hour. Thank you so much for sharing that recipe.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Love to keep that alive.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Beth Kurtz-Taylor is a food educator, freelance writer, and one of the owners of Third Space Bakery. You can find out more about Beth's business at Third Space PGH on Instagram. That's our show for this week. We want to thank all of our guests and contributors, and to Kevin Solecki of Carnegie Accordion Company for providing the music to our show. We'll be back again next week with another fresh episode. Stay tuned.